I've never cried watching anything before.
Not even Pokemon?
Does misting counts?
I think we've all missed it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've never cried watching anything before. Even then, I don't know. When I tweeted that, I don't know how we're going to record. I just don't know.
What to even say?
Yeah. I feel really vulnerable right now. And I know that everyone is listening to our podcast.
Welcome.
Support group.
I think a little bit of silence is appropriate as we start the show. It's just unbelievable the way that it ended and how the story played itself out. I certainly didn't see it coming. I don't know if you guys did, but just it's hard because one of the most beloved characters in the series is now presumably gone. And I thought back to when I watched season one, specifically the Baylor episode, and just the raw emotion after what happened to Ned. I hadn't felt that in a really long time. And mostly because having read the books, I knew what was going to happen at the Red Wedding and some of the other major events that sparked a lot of emotion. But this was just something totally different, and you just were left completely in awe.
I think I'm gonna cry again.
You know, we like to believe in destiny and these characters. We know that there is a destiny ahead of them, and for Hodor's, he was essentially appointed his destiny at an early age. That was the one thing that he had to do, and it's what he presumably died doing. And that's something to be so, it's cruel, and at the same time, it's a little beautiful and confusing. There's certainly a lot to talk about as far as the circumstances, like how we hate Bran more than Ollie. Ghost kills Bran.
Yep. Ollie's out, Bran's in.
But there is something very beautiful in the portrayal, both actors, playing young Willis and Christian Nairn, of course. I'm blown away. We saw a TV show, guys. We saw an amazing episode. Probably one of the strongest episodes. Actually, not probably. Definitely one of the strongest episodes that Game of Thrones has put out.
I'm visiting home and I'm sitting outside just on the edge of a forest. And I watched the episode outside laying in the grass. And
it sounds amazing.
It was the ambiance was too much. It all just kind of came together. And there at the end, I put down my phone completely because we take small notes when we watch sometimes so we can remember in the moment. I kind of treat it like free writing and just, you know, able to capture like sort of a thought. It's usually just caps. Like my phone auto-corrects Brienne in caps automatically because of my notes. And I just put my phone down and just sat with my face glued to the screen. The entire sequence once it began outside and obviously as it kept going, that was just and there's too many points to talk about in this episode.
It was just, we were talking a little bit about this before we sat down to record. In my mind, from start to finish, was just a complete episode and delivered on so many different fronts, including the one I'm sure we're going to spend the most time talking about. I don't remember an episode like this, and certainly there's been some good ones so far this season, but just so much from, you know, Sansa and Littlefinger all the way through to the end with Hodor. This was just, it's hard to say it's one of my favorite episodes, but I thought it was definitely one of the most complete episodes in a long time.
It's the most I've ever felt watching something. And I know that all of us, a part of this community, have a unique position because we really, really, really care. And this episode was too much. From seeing young Willis writhing on the ground and what that triggers inside of you, but also just the weight of all the answers that we got. It was, you know, the origin story of the White Walkers.
Children, what have you done?
No dinner.
No dinner
this
for you. Go
one
to your
of those
room.
Moments where I wish that we recorded like 2 days after we watched the episode, because it's just so hard to even talk about not only just Hodor and the White Walkers and everything, but even like Micah said, the Iron Islands and Sansa and Littlefinger. There's so many moments that I don't know how to unpack any of them right now. So I'm glad we get to do this together.
And Danny and Jorah, I'm sure, gave you guys some feels.
That was holy crap.
All of that in this episode. And I still feel like there are mysteries unfolding around us and answers that are yet to be started. Like, I for one think Baelish could be leading Sansa Brienne into a trap. And that was something that gestated out of this episode. It's not that things are feeling necessarily closer to the end, but things sure as hell are moving along. So, you know, I just, this continued to amaze me, knowing that this is the halfway point, for this season, this episode 5. There are 5 episodes remaining before this season is over. I mean, what a season it's been so far, but guys, I mean, we have 5 more episodes left. And think about all that can be accomplished.
I don't know that they can do this again. I don't know that the story can do this again. I mean, this feels like a real, real turning point. Not only was the Night King there inside of the tree, staring down the three-eyed raven before he slew him, but we know who he is now. We know why he is, and all of it. While I was watching that moment, and I saw it happen. Those eyes turn blue. Everything. The chronology, the world, understanding, and why the children, the first men, had to defend themselves against the likes of men, and the thing that they created to protect themselves against the likes of men, that machine that they created, is flawlessly performing its design and is uncontrollable. And for all of those years that this beast slept from the last stand against them with the forces that did stand against them and were able to put them at bay. They've been waiting and waiting and waiting for the right moment. The world is in chaos, both east and west. It's been worse, I'm sure, but right now it's perfect. And they took long enough for the world to stop thinking about them. They allowed themselves this threat to become legend and lore and complacent. And clearly they're very real. And this perfect moment, this marriage of all of the chaos and their rise forward is so interesting to me, because now what we're going to see from this turning point in the middle of season 6 and for the rest of the series and for the rest of the story, I believe that what we're going to see is the Song of Ice and Fire. It's the people like Sansa, the people like Arya, the people like Daenerys performing together and with their fellowship. Even with their differences, that will be the only way. It will be the only way they can stand against an enemy that has been sleeping for so long. Dragons, Daenerys, Azor Ahai, it's going to take everything. And that just sort of became very, very clear in this episode. And we knew that they were a threat before, but I mean, like I said,
it all just kind of big threat now.
Unloaded at once.
That's for sure. Yeah. That was such great background that you just gave, and I felt strongly that a lot of this episode was about origin, and you touched on the Children of the Forest creating the White Walkers, but even when Arya and Jaqen are talking in the House of Black and White that the Faceless Men founded Braavos, the fact that Jorah is referred to again as Jorah the Andal, and there was just a sense, you know, even going back in time to see Hodor and Winterfell, there was a clear sort of theme in this episode about learning what preceded. And I think that it will only continue to unravel as we make our way through this story. I mean, this was a huge moment, a huge reveal, something that people who have read the series for over 20 years have wondered, who is Hodor? What does his name mean? And it was just so masterfully done in this episode in terms of how it was revealed and the importance of it. The fact that Bran can really manipulate events, both past and present. And so I don't know what that means for the future, but clearly it's a reason why the Night's King is after him.
So my question is, did Hodor know the whole time that he was going to die for Bran?
Could he see Bran at Winterfell?
His purpose since he was a child was to protect Ned Stark's son and to help him.
Before he existed.
Before he existed, by him. You know, his friends that he met later and traveled with and went through so much to get to where they are. And those are the people that are responsible for not only what happened to him, but, you know, his whole life from that moment forward. It changed. And he ended it with them, just like he started his new life with them. And just bravo to George R. R. Martin. What a gut wrencher that is. That is such a, I mean, apart from the children inventing the White Walkers, which is an answer we have been thirsting for ever since the show began. Those of you who have read the story ever since the very first chapter, it's so well done. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. and it opens up another can of worms. So I want to know more. I want more.
And I was going to say to you, as we started this episode out, I mean, are you still on the side of the Children of the Forest now, knowing what you know? And hopefully this is canon. Hopefully it is true and not just something that the show came up with.
Right.
Because there is, of course, that possibility.
That is possible, yeah.
However, I just think it's an amazing twist to the story that this group of beings that they are responsible for creating are now the ones that they are trying to, you know, save the world from. And most of them, I'm assuming there could be a few more children floating around somewhere, but most of them were
just wiped
killed
out
in this episode.
And that's
kudos to the one who finally stood up in the tunnel there, because she's the one who is responsible for, at least from that flashback, everything that has happened since.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To talk about the children, do we forgive them? Do we like them still? I like them? Oh. you're asking me specifically.
It's important.
Okay. Gee, what do I think?
I'm joking.
I hope all of them weren't wiped out, because I still want to know the in-between things. Like, I'm not satisfied with just, like, at some point, because from this episode, we learn the Children of the Forest created what we know as the White Walkers to defend themselves against the men who are coming over, presumably of what we would call the First Men, who were destroying the Andals, who were destroying the trees and their sacred places of worship, etc. At some point, the Children of the Forest also helped build the wall to keep the White Walkers out of the south, or everything south of the wall, to help the men, to help the Andals, to
that's a lot of regret, isn't it?
The realm. I mean, it's a hell of a lot of regret.
Yeah.
To do that, though.
At what point did their creations turn on them, and why? And, you know, frankly, now that the Night's King has slain the Three-Eyed Raven, or former Three-Eyed Raven, isn't it a bit like killing your own father? You know, to kill your maker in that way was sort of their.
He's not their maker, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know his relationship with the Children of the Forest, but it's kind of like that. That's they delayed whatever they were doing to come and find Bran after they knew where he was, and to destroy that shrine, that Weirwood tree.
Mm-hmm. Well, the same tree from the flashback, right? At least that's the way I interpreted it. The tree against which the Night's King was made was this tree that they were inside and have been for the past few episodes.
I thought it was a different tree, because the tree,
well, it grew over
rock
time.
Formations and stuff.
The tree that Bran is at when the Night's King touches him is that tree. Because remember, when they first came upon the tree, it was in bloom. You know, it wasn't dead, and there weren't the gravestones all around. Mm-hmm. I think it's different trees.
Well, I mean, that in my mind was how many hundreds, if not thousands of years earlier.
Thousands and thousands.
So over time, that tree could have grown into what we saw in this episode.
Yeah, time travel is a strange thing.
And if I'm not mistaken, though, and was it obsidian that they drove into the heart mm-hmm. of the Night's King? Was it dragon glass?
It looked like it.
It looked like dragon glass.
Which would also explain in a way, why Dragon Glass can kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But it creates them and it kills them?
I don't know. There's so many questions.
Why ice? You know, like, why was this their answer? Why was this their weapon? I'm curious. There has to be more there.
And what was the, who were they sacrificing to? Or was that a sacrifice at all? Was that a normal man they were killing?
Mm-hmm.
It's a past Lord Commander that is fabled to be the original Night King.
Right.
And we may see an answer for that in the show, but we also may not.
Mm-hmm.
I think Eric brings up a good point about what point did the White Walkers become out of control, or what point did the Children of the Forest feel like they had to start running from them? I think that's something that I hope that we find out. And if not in the show, then maybe something we'll have to wait to explore in the books if this is this is going to be canon.
That look he gave the Three-Eyed Raven was not empty. It's hard to tell. I don't know if it was malice. I don't know if it was condescension. I don't know if it was, you know, look at me, you know, person that's connected with me. Like, I don't know what sort of feeling, I don't know what he has out for those people, other than the fact that, you know, maybe they have information on their undoing possibly, or, you know, they're just bent on destroying everyone. Like, obviously there's some pretty obvious answers. But the real true answer to those feelings he had, the Night King had, the Three-Eyed Raven, I think will be telling to part of that connection that we're talking about. Like, at what point did they turn, and what kind of connection do they actually have with these people? I mean, we understand, right, that they would be angry at the Children of the Forest, and we understand that the Children of the Forest are very much a part of the technology. They are the technology of what they're doing at the Great Werewood Tree. So it's interesting. They can't be happy that they made them and then built them a wall. That can't be enough.
Yeah. And speaking of connections, what now, if any, is still the connection between Bran and the Night's King? It's almost like the Horcrux connection between Harry and Voldemort.
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
And he's marked, right? And so,
can he run fast enough?
He can follow him through time and space. You get a time traveling Night's King following Bran everywhere he goes.
And what's the future now for Bran and Mira? I mean, Mira's the only one that's been left to defend Bran, and assuming from the end of this episode, I think it's a safe assumption that Hodor is not going to be reappearing. If he is, it's funny.
I was nice blue eyes.
Yeah, that's another question. I mean, do we see him somewhere down the road as a reanimated Hodor?
Jeez,
that's awful. I think that's awful.
Well, Bran used them, so why not the Night King?
Right.
Yeah,
but they're all family.
Oh man, I would.
Christian Nairn, the actor who portrays Hodor, a friend of ours, is joining the podcast this week, and we will make sure to ask him for every spoiler that you're interested in. Are you a white?
Grilling him.
Christian. I mean, they were tearing his get off, though, and stabbing him through the door.
Yeah.
The door that he held as if it were his entire purpose since he was young to do that. It's,
yeah.
Mira being off with Bran alone, that was, correct me if I'm wrong, that was foretold just a couple episodes ago. The one child told Mira that would happen. Right? Mm-hmm. Did she say there will come a time when you are out there with him without us? And but I mean, seeing as how Bran was still grasping at the roots of that Werewood Tree to sort of activate his powers of observation of time and space, I'm interested in finding out how he's going to continue to use his skills, his power, without such a crutch.
And we've been talking about the repercussions of him doing this on his own and what that would mean. And I wonder if what he's seen is going to, how that may change his trajectory, how that might change how he sees his powers, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I feel like he's got to know that he messed up. Maybe he doesn't.
Went right to there. It's just like, hey, I'm going to go out, taking the car out without mom and dad knowing. And he just went right to a drag race. You know, like
he messed up big time.
Couldn't we have just gone back to the Tower of Joy?
He crashed the car right away.
He just immediately hit a telephone pole backing out of the driveway. I mean, why was that telephone pole there? I don't know, Bran. Why did you go there? I understand that you're curious, but good God.
And then he walks straight, as soon as he arrives there and he starts walking straight into them, just out loud saying, what are you doing? What are you doing? Stop. But he continues to walk.
You know that it's a good episode when it takes us that long to mention that Bran walked through the Army of the Dead, and it was... What show? What are we even watching? You know, I'm used to seeing Bron, you know, saying really funny stuff, and
I do miss Bron.
You know, like, what Me show too. Are we watching? That was, man, that was good. That was so good.
And then they're all outside. Tree. Just,
they're terrifying.
And Bran is still hanging out in Winterfell. I was so mad.
I want to know why this was important. I understand Hodor buying them time is important, but was that it? Because I know that there's more to do for Bran now that he's replacing the Three-Eyed Raven. We need to know about the Tower of Joy and several other points that I'm sure that the Three-Eyed Raven would have liked to have introduced Bran to as part of his teaching, as part of his learning. But we don't have that chance, and we don't know. And presumably, Bran can now travel very powerfully away from the tree because he was doing that in this episode. So we can assume that he can do that remotely. Right. So maybe he doesn't necessarily have to be at the tree. Fine.
Well, he can use other ones. I mean, there's no reason to think he can't use other weirwoods.
Right. If it's necessary.
And he was halfway between sort of the worlds as well. He could hear Mira, as could the Three-Eyed Raven, but he could also still be present in the past. He could warg into Hodor in the present and still warg into Hodor in the past. No wonder it got messed up. He was doing four things at once in different times and places.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions about the mechanics of that.
I mean, that was such a cluster, you know, of crazy everything that was happening, on top of the fact that the Army of the Dead was seizing the stronghold.
And how much does Hodor know? That's my big question that I said before. Yeah. How much did he understand what was going on then? How much does he understand going on when we're in the present, and what that could have meant for his whole story?
All good questions for Christian.
Yeah. If he saw Bran and later recognized Bran to be that person that he saw and this happened to, it would be so beautiful and explain a lot of his true devotion. Not that he wouldn't have been devoted otherwise, because I believe that his character, that Hodor was a good person, and that would have seen what was happening in Winterfell with Theon and the Greyjoys, and would have stuck with him and would have stuck with the Starks, especially growing up with his family and being as close to his family like he was. But also knowing that he had a predetermined destiny, that's so cool.
It's incredible.
That's so cool. But why was he there? Why was the three, like, was it because, like I said, that Hodor needed to buy them time? Is that why he took them there?
That was always the exit vision. That was always the last thing that the Three-Eyed Raven was going to show him. It was like,
good God.
You know, this episode directed by Jack Bender, who did many episodes of Lost, this reminds me of the incident at the Swan in 1976, which, it, you know, it, we learn about it early on. We don't know who caused it. And then, not to spoil Lost, but we end up finding out who caused it. Right. And it has something to do with time travel. That was
emotional too. Very emotional.
That's this. That's this episode. That's this. Bran caused this. And we hate Bran now. I think it's safe to say.
But I don't hate Bran, though? Yeah. I don't hate Bran, but
it's like what the Blood Raven said when he's like, it's time for you to become me. And Bran asks, he's ready. And then he says, no. Like, Bran is just young. He doesn't know what he's doing, and he just...
He's human.
He's human.
And then it switches over to Castle Black, and then we come back, and then he's kind of ready, but not really. And it's... I think that part of me wonders whether or not he allowed Bran to go and see the Night's King. I feel like... Remember there was that scene where he throws... Sorry, the scene was so dark, I couldn't even see what it was that he picked up and threw at him.
I mean, a piece of wood, yeah, wood chip. Yeah.
And
a lot of wood there.
I can't help but wonder, right, if he knew that eventually Bran was going to do something like this, and he just allowed him to do so because immediately he knew that the Night's King had touched him. And then, of course, it was so important that he see that very last vision back at Winterfell, and you see Lord Rickard Stark, right, talking to Ned, and Hodor's there, and everything plays out the way that we saw, but I'm still just trying to piece it all together because I'm not sure who this guy really is, what his intentions were for Bran, and how much more he could have potentially learned had he not gone and just got, you know, sort of that itchy, got to touch that little teenage piece of boy. Weirwood over there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what if this was a unique time? Like, did the Three-Eyed Raven know that they'd be attacked at that time and that the only way for Bran to survive and leave the tree? Did he know at some point this was going to happen? So the only way that it would take place, like, so he went in the future and he knew that saying this to Hodor, communicating with Hodor like he did when he was young, would turn him into that person with that disorder, and that would lead him into this life. But how would he know that specifically? Like, without having going further into the future and seeing that it worked, how could he with so much confidence say, this is the vision, this is the time, this is what has to happen? Or was this unique? And was this the first time that it happened?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if it's a straight line, you know? I don't think that it can be a straight line.
No.
Obviously, there are different angles here, and I'm just curious as to the real reason why that took place. And that could be the simple answer, and that's okay if it is the simple answer. The Three-Eyed Raven can go through space and time. He saw that Hodor saves you guys by holding the door, and then he put two and two together. Or maybe he went and, as a third party, looked at Bran traveling through time, you know, communicating, Mimir shouting, hold the door, through him.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, how would he know with full confidence? I don't know.
I also think of, Prisoner of Azkaban. Harry casts the Patronus because he sees his father do it, but it's not actually his father. It's him. You know, it's a circle.
Exactly.
It's a loop.
Exactly.
But, you know, was it always just him? You know, who cast the first Patronus the first time? It's such a, you know, time, baby.
Right. But with time, it makes sense because that's what happened, you
right.
know? Mm-hmm. Like, that's just what happened. But in this, it's interesting because is it what happens?
Yeah.
If you cast a Patronus, it will repel Dementors. Mm-hmm. But if you communicate through a vision, does this happen to people? Ned, when he reacted at the Tower of Joy, I know it wasn't as strong. That didn't happen to Ned, you know?
He didn't try warging into him.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. But it must have been because it only half worked because he was halfway between planes.
Yeah, and I'm afraid to kind of go down this road because I feel like I'm not going to make a whole lot of sense, but at least with the Night's King, right? I feel like he could touch him. He could reach out and see him because he was created, basically sacrificed at a weirwood tree, right? And isn't that how Bran is going through and seeing all these visions? So
sort of same lines of magic, maybe.
The Night's King, though, I just have a lot of questions about him. But with the Three-Eyed Raven, it's had he already seen this vision in the past at Winterfell, where Willis starts to go through this seizure, and once Bran and Hodor and Mira show up, he begins to put the pieces of the puzzle together. How long has he had this knowledge? Does Hodor become Hodor no matter what? Or is it because Bran goes back in time and creates Hodor that Hodor becomes Hodor? And that's what I was saying earlier, like, I'm afraid to go down this road because I'm not sure I'm going to make a lot of sense, but that's kind of the way that I'm looking at it. And what else does that mean that Bran can do? What else can he manipulate? What else can he affect? Or even change from the past.
And what's he going to try to go back in effect?
What will he do? Because I think he will try.
He doesn't have anyone to guide him. now.
We haven't gotten that speech that with great power comes great responsibility, but I think the fact that what he did to Hodor will humanize him in a way, will make him not want to affect the past or be more cautious in doing so. I think that might work to be his conscience.
But what do you think is the future immediate for him?
He's running from the White Walkers.
I think he's going to ask these same questions that we're asking when he gets a moment to breathe. Yeah. Why was I there? Was it supposed to be like this?
He has no protection, though. I mean, Summer is gone now, too. And
that was, come on.
That was unnecessary, right?
I could have done it without. These direwolves are going to die defending their
except ghost
Stark components. Well, that's true. You know, I prefer to think that direwolves can tell a losing battle and would have, you know, somebody just would have run with Bran and helped that way. But you know, that didn't happen. It's just seeing these dogs cut up is a favorite pastime of the show creators. I don't know if that's too rough to say, but it was heart wrenching. So much was going on too. You just had no time to really feel about it.
I guess my question is, where is Bran going, and who can he look to protect him? Because he's defenseless. I mean, Mira is certainly a viable option, but there's only so much she can do in certain situations. So those are two big questions for me.
My bet is still for more children. Because they have the magic that can keep these things at bay. I know Bran is marked now, and that the magic of the, I don't know what you'd call it, the tree, just, you know, was broken because of what happened. But there has to be. I mean, anybody with any answers as to how to even just temporarily get away from these guys are going to be more children. But you know, maybe they did all just burn to death. Maybe they did all just die right then and there. That was the last of them. I mean,
get away from the Night's King?
Yeah.
And where do you go or where do you hide?
Fast horse.
The wall. I mean, the other side of the wall.
Try to continue to explore these visions that whatever we call it. He can't, can he? I mean, I don't know where he's going to go without being tracked down now that he's got that mark on him.
Yeah. That mark, guys. My fears of Bran becoming someone that we're possibly against, I feel like, are growing.
There has to be one Stark we can't quite see eye to eye with, right? Used to be Sansa, but now she's come around.
Has she? And
Sansa, yeah. In this episode, God.
There were moments.
There were some questions that I have.
Are you not sure?
Sansa wasn't honest with Jon, and I don't see why. Yeah. It wasn't for Jon's sake. It's completely fine in your small council, one of the coolest small councils ever. Definitely of 2K16.
Yeah,
it's totally fine to tell all of them, not only Jon, but to say, hey, Baelish, who put me in Winterfell, I just met him in Molestown, and we have those numbers as well, if we need them, because he owes me big time. Why keep Baelish in your back pocket? I'm not sure where she's coming from with this decision.
That's a little concerning, almost.
The men of the Eyrie at Moat Cailin just waiting for a signal.
Like, does she want to surprise Jon? Like, make it even richer? Like, the victory that much sweeter? Look at the last minute win. No, yeah. No.
I don't think so.
Of course not. I mean, of course not.
I think we saw her being kind of smug and happily being able to deliver the news about the Tullys, but as somebody who will defend Sansa Stark to the grave, I just was concerned almost, or just questioning why she didn't tell Jon the truth. Why doesn't she trust him 100%? Why doesn't she be honest with him? I think that
why trust Baelish?
Why
should you believe anything that he says? Why should you believe that the Blackfish has retaken River Run? It could be a trap.
Right. And she stands so strongly against him in that scene with him, and Littlefinger's cowering in her presence, essentially, but she still
believes him.
Yeah, when coming back to this small council that we love, still kind of has him in the back of her mind.
I think he knew she'd send Brienne to treat, and I think Brienne's going to get captured by the Freys.
Yeah, but why would Baelish care to give Brienne to other people?
I wonder.
What maybe prize still, is Brienne for anyone?
Maybe he's still trying to...
Dormund.
Well, other than Dormund.
So you want a wildling Omni? I'll get you.
He's like,
get
a wildling with the beard.
Yeah.
But like, and that's where a lot of the secrecy to me makes sense. Like, I understand her misgivings, and these misgivings come from Brienne, but you got to know that Sansa feels them too about Davos and about Melisandre, because I understand that. But John, like, would you not trust John enough not to tell them? Like, if you really don't want Davos and Melisandre to know that there's another army nearby in the north that will help you. Fine, but I don't know. It's interesting. So it makes a lot of sense, and that could be how it's explained. That could be her motivations, and
maybe
that would
tell them later.
Yeah, exactly. And those would be sound motivations. So I understand that, but the stuff between
maybe it's stitched into the swaggy coat that she made for him.
Mm-hmm, there's a secret fold.
Yeah, just a little message.
It was pretty cool that he put on that direwolf sigil. I like mm-hmm. that.
They looked so awesome riding out of the wall together in there.
Yeah. And that's what I was thinking. It was all kind of clicking in my mind. I was like, this is it. This is, and we've known this, but this is the Song of Ice and Fire. It's these mm-hmm. trials and tribulations. It's these people that are going to have to rise up and unite the world against this great threat. And it's just humans, man. They're all just broken people. We look back in history and we know that generations of heroes were raised. And as they were raised, they were helped by people around them. I'm thinking of people like Cersei and Jaime. That are from, and even Tyrion, that are from a different time. They're older. They're not the younger class of heroes. They're a part of what's happening, but like what happened to Barristan Selmy, in the rising of a new era, there are going to be casualties. And those casualties can come from the greatest pool to the most menial character. And I'm afraid that characters like Cersei and like Jaime, and possibly even Tyrion, maybe not Tyrion. Tyrion may stay and remain as an old person, but these important people, and it's going to take important people, to help this cause ever happen. But these important people may end up being, you know, part of the sacrifice that it takes for this new world to rise up for the young ones like Jon and Sansa and Daenerys and Bran, et cetera, to rise up and to run the world, to operate the planet, you know, to save humanity, to save mankind, to save the living from the dead.
That's no small task. Like, that's just like the weight of the world.
It almost needs to get so much worse before it can get better, right? Like, I foresee Essos being in trouble from the threat from the north of Westeros. Like, I just foresee like a true worldwide cataclysm, winter everywhere.
Holy shit.
I mean, because otherwise it's just this plight that just Westeros had to deal with, right? Like, mm-hmm. Dany's over in Essos and she has to get to Westeros, but Westeros is where it goes down. How will people in Essos hear tales of, and will they believe? And, you know, this is...
They don't care, though. I mean, yeah. Not that they don't care, but, I mean, just use a point of reference that we saw in this episode in Braavos, where Arya is watching this stage play where they're mocking what is happening over in King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. I would think that in certain parts of Essos, the weather is comparable, but I don't think that they have to face the same kind of threat, because there is that narrow sea that divides them. And maybe they can look to assistance from the people of Essos, especially considering what we saw in Meereen in this episode and the growing power of the Lord of Light and his followers. And I just, this episode with, yeah. Kimvara, and I had tweeted this out on Game of Owns, but I just felt like for two of the largest power players in this series, being Baelish and Varys, they got owned hard. And Baelish by Sansa, which we already talked about, and then Varys by this Red Priestess. Varys, who never really looks unsettled or uncomfortable. Man, did he look just nervous and sort of even scared at moments. You saw it in his eyes with the story. How could possibly this woman know his story? But I feel like there's something here. When all this comes to a head, it's going to be, you know, sort of the Lord of Light versus the Night's King and the White Walkers, at least in some part, right? She mentions how Daenerys is essentially Azor Ahai to her.
Mm, right. That was very interesting.
Yeah, she definitely taps into Varys's deepest fears, almost, is kind of the impression that I got.
In an episode that we got to see the White Walkers be created at the moment that they were created, which is more than I could have ever asked for. Someone stood in front of Varys. Now, remember the show that we're watching. It's not this on the nose ever. Like, we did not expect the White Walker origin story. And I know that we did not expect someone to stand in front of Varys and to touch his arm and to tell him she could not only say what the voice that spoke to him from the flames when his mutilations was taking place said, but who was speaking it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Like, what?
I know.
What?
She talks to me.
She said, knowledge has made you powerful, but there is still so much more you don't know.
And for Varys to hear that, that's...
For us to hear it.
Yeah. Man.
Mm-hmm.
But I like how Stannis is always constantly called into question in terms of being the one that was promised, right? Davos mentioned it in the last episode, and here you have Varys bringing it up yet again. And so why should we continue to believe in Jon or believe in Dany when clearly mistakes have been made along the way? But even Varys says to her, it must be hard for a fanatic to admit a mistake. And, mm-hmm. and she kind of responds by saying, yeah, but we're only human, men and women who follow the Lord of Light, but we have to trust in what it is that he's trying to tell us.
Well, because we have to do something.
Yeah.
We have to do something. Everything's a mistake. The White Walkers becoming who they are, that was a mistake. That wasn't divine purpose by some old ancient god. That was something that a lot of people thought, and that might have been the only explanation. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true.
It's all a mistake. You have to follow someone. You have to come together. And if it takes a leader, if it takes a prophecy, if it takes a legend,
to make sense of all this,
fine.
Yeah.
You know, like, fine, sure. But you have to come together. And that's, I don't know. It's just so cool what's happening because, we thought all these things and the books aren't even out yet. To tell us these things. Winds of Winter is not out. And the world right now that watches this show, and it's a very, very popular program, is getting introduced to these like really broad scope ideas. And I just think it's good for people to widen like this. And it just through a television show, sort of jabs at what people represent during elections, or jabs at, just basically what I'm saying. I know I'm rambling, but for the show to illustrate such important points and fallacies of humanity, is really important. It's important to address these issues, and Game of Thrones is doing it in a super enjoyable way. But when the Greyjoys are in Pyke and are talking about Daenerys, the whole war, it's just everything opens up. Those are the connections, right? The signals are firing and the world is growing smaller while at the same time growing much larger.
And we'd like to take a second to thank Blue Apron for sponsoring this week's episode.
Picked a good one.
Yes, they certainly did.
Lots of blue eyes, blue aprons.
Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their community of artisanal suppliers, family-run farms, fisheries, and ranchers. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron is bringing you the best. For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals.
We felt that it was our responsibility, nay, our duty, to try Blue Apron for ourselves. And I would just like to say that it feels like Christmas when food comes in the mail. Different meals came in with the first package, and obviously they're something like you would buy from a fancy restaurant, and they come with these pages with art of like step-by-step cooking instructions, like how to put it all together. And it's been a fun experience putting the ingredients together and to try to make it look exactly like the picture. And as far as the price is concerned, you literally can't go to the grocery store and get ingredients this good for this small of a price. You know how like it's hard to decide, like, oh, what are we going to eat tonight? And like, I don't know. I want this.
Oh, and what goes someone with else, what? You know, what's going to balance yeah. the acidity with it? I watch the Food Network all the time. I can't even, you know, make sense of what they all say.
If there are couples listening to this podcast, please understand that a team of experienced food deciders will craft your meal experience for you. And you get to cook it together. It's like a fun exercise.
As an example, here are the meals for the month of May. You get crispy cod and cabbage slaw tacos with pepita, pineapple, and avocado salsa.
Mouth is watering.
Right? That's one. Middle Eastern chicken and chickpea stew with pita croutons, which I love croutons. So
who doesn't?
Looking forward to that the most. And pan-seared pork chops with two cheese, mashed potatoes, and sauteed spinach.
It feels like a George R. R. Martin crafted menu at this point.
If you like anything that Eric just mentioned, and if your mouth is watering like ours, you get two meals for free that you can try out for yourself and see how it is. So you can go check out the menu and get two free meals with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/owns. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. And that's blueapron.com/owns.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Two meals on us.
Croutons. Croutons.
We now have the honor to introduce you to a new sponsor of the podcast. Total War Warhammer, a marriage made in gaming. All right. Keep up with me here. Two different games. Warhammer, rich, high fantasy world of perpetual war and massive battles. And Total War, critically acclaimed, epic scale, conquest-based strategy games. Put them together and you get a gorgeous high fantasy world of perpetual war and conquest on a colossal scale, brought to life in hours and hours of gripping strategy gameplay.
No one's done Warhammer, or indeed fantasy, like this before. From the personal skills of your characters to 20,000 roaring orcs. No fantasy strategy game is this big and detailed. I cannot stop talking like this.
This game releases tomorrow. Total War Warhammer releases tomorrow, and they were kind enough to sponsor the podcast, so we're really excited to tell you guys that when you listen to this episode, it will be available.
So whether you're vampire counts, monsters, lords, heroes,
dwarves, green skins.
I've been looking to get into a game just like this, and I think that I will be.
Well, it's got everything that we love.
Yeah. If you like Game of Thrones, yeah, you definitely are going to like this game.
Right now, if you're listening right now, this game is available in the Steam Marketplace. So if you are a PC gamer, I suggest that this is what you do.
So be sure to pick up your copy of Total War Warhammer today on Steam. And you have the introduction of an extremely bold character in Euron Greyjoy, who has no trouble admitting to the fact that he killed his brother and threw him off a bridge, yeah, and is here to lead the Ironborn and build a fleet and seduce Daenerys with this fleet so that she can travel back to Westeros and reclaim what's rightfully hers. And he had a bunch of cock jokes that he threw in there.
Of course, for good measure. And I know we've seen a lot of incredible stuff this episode and this season, but this sequence in the Iron Islands between Yara trying and Theon defending Yara to get the throne, and Euron actually us getting to see him on screen and talking about Dany and talking about building a fleet, and then the sequence when Euron is being drowned and we see Yara and Theon piecing out behind the words of Dampair when he's drowning him. I mean, this was probably one of the coolest scenes.
It was cool.
Ever. I loved every second of it.
It was cool. I do have to say, though, I'm not sure if you guys are with me. My Euron, George's Euron, feels more dangerous than this Euron. And it could be because we saw him die, and he got very vulnerable. He was dipped by someone else. I know it's his brother and it's a priest, so you sort of bend to the will of religion, even the greatest tyrants do. But I don't know, just for some reason he seemed very, you know, swaggy and let's go kill them or let's go murder them. And he spoke well and he's going to rouse them a fleet. He promises them the world. He's Euron on paper. But just for some reason, I was just like, I didn't feel as murderously scared of this man as I wanted to be. And I know that that's a really small point, but I just thought it was worth saying. I wondered if you guys felt the same.
It's very interesting.
projecting. I don't know.
I can see that because I feel like Euron has a little bit more rustic swagger to him. I mean, he's no Captain Jack Sparrow in terms of like life of the party, but
three shillings and we forget the name.
he's got an eye patch, number one, right? In the books, hence the name Crow's Eye.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would expect a little bit more of just like a darker individual than what we saw when he presented himself to the King's Moot in this episode.
Did you think it while you were watching it, or is it my fault?
No, no. I think I subconsciously thought it, and now that you've raised it, I definitely make the connection.
You time traveled, and you knew that later you would think that about Euron. You were just wondering the moment that it happened.
Or did you time travel and knew that I would think this, and so you raised the question.
To do it, too, but did I know that raising the question, that would be the thing that would trigger you to feel that way?
Ask Brad.
Let's ask our friend Roseye, who only ever says Roseye in the background.
No, okay, well, that's okay. You know, very, very small thing. Doesn't have to be the same sort of Euron, and I'm sure that he's going to be like piercingly deadly in his own way. And
yeah,
and that's fine. I mean, that person being so dangerous and deadly is cool on its own right. You know what I mean? I'm not saying he needed to be a cartoon character. Because an eye patch might have even helped with that a little bit if they would have kept it.
I guess that's true.
But at the same time, he's a badass in the books. Like, Euron Greyjoy is a badass. He is a captain of a ship. Everybody has had their tongue removed. I need silence.
I'm not really worried about it, though.
I'm not either.
I think that he's still going to serve his purpose. I think that we're still going to, at least I still feel excited about it.
I am too. And Yara has her fleet, so that's cool.
Some of our best ships. That was really cool. Where will
they
go?
Where are they going, though?
Yeah.
To Danny.
Of course.
Let's get there first.
He has to build 1,000 ships before he can leave.
Yeah. They got plenty of time to catch up.
What if Danny and Miss Greyjoy end up ruling together? That would be interesting.
That'd be pretty cool. But they're
Danny
they're
and Yara. And then Sansa in the north, be still my beating heart.
That would be interesting. And we did see in the trailer, right, the Yara in Volantis.
We did.
Mm-hmm.
The tattoo.
So I guess they are headed in that direction.
It makes sense. I mean, if she can't win the throne, then let's go do what she wanted to do anyway, but without the backing of all of Iron Island.
I would love to see an epic sea battle between Yara and Dion and Euron before they get to Daenerys.
And the monkeys, too. Keep the monkeys.
Solidor San shows up and I don't know.
When she was climbing on the ships, like during that whole, that was so, I just felt, okay, here we go. The show's opening up next season, maybe this season. It's going to, you know, it's going to be, Game of Thrones is going to have pirate action, you know?
It was such a cool scene. Yeah.
It's so cool. I'm glad George wrote all these different cultures and geographies and topographies into the story because it's so rich. It's so much to chew on. You could have told this with any, you know, we could have stayed in the north and gotten the message across for the series, but no, we get to have pirates in Game of Thrones too.
Oh my gosh.
Search your heart, Eric. You know it's true.
Do you think that's what Ian McShane is doing this season? He's going to reprise his role from Pirates as Blackbeard.
Yes.
And just show up in the middle. He's going to board their ships when Theon and Yara are trying to escape.
Blackbeard crosses universes and he finds the Bermuda Triangle and it brings him to Westeros.
Right?
Yeah.
This is totally, it's crossed because Disney owns, well, no, everything. I guess that wouldn't quite work. Yep.
Bran's just opened up this whole world of possibilities for things that can happen in this series. So
I'm scared right now,
David Tennant,
where I'm recording, that Bran's just going to appear like in the doorway and say something to me. I'm worried.
You sure you think that about this episode?
He's like, wait,
you sure you don't want to go back and watch it
episode
again?
Episode 7. Oh, I'm like, yeah. Oh, damn it.
And then the Night's King is going to walk out of the forest.
I can't wait till we have the Night's King on the podcast to learn about some of his motivations.
He's not going to say anything. He's just going to stare intently into his microphone.
This whole time. Yeah, guys.
He was tweeting, actually, pretty actively during the episode.
I saw that. He's not one for talking, but those thumbnails don't get in the way of a smartphone screen.
Oh, man.
And he looked different. He looked a little bit tired. I don't know if they get tired, but he looked tired. Those dark circles.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Where are they
not
going sure on that? You know? And how scary was Bran? And to me, I just felt like, uh-oh, is this a heavy-handed hint? When Bran first warged and the wide shot opened up and it was sort of arching over the army and Bran was alone standing there, he looked like the leader of the army of the dead.
I mean...
Damn.
Yeah.
That'd be intense.
It looked cool.
So much for warging into a dragon at the end game.
Maybe one of the dragons is turned into a slave of death.
I can't even... And now... Like, retroactively, like, the Green Sight is tied into... Because the Green Sight was tied into the Children of the Forest. The Children of the Forest harnessed this energy which created the ice, the White Walkers. Like, it's all... We see how it's connected. We see how at least those two things are connected.
Yeah.
And they also harness fire, which... And the magic that keeps the White Walkers out. So, it all goes back to the Children of the Forest for me. It all goes back to their magic, their understanding of the
it's
world.
It's their fault.
It's their fault, damn it. But also there, you know, therein lies the answer. I mean, the wall is still keeping those things out. So there have to be more of them.
John said, don't knock it down while I'm gone.
Yeah, but to me, I got so scared when he said advice. That because I was like, and we've been saying this whole season, there's no time for offhanded comments. And no. So as soon as he said that, I was like, great. The wall's coming down before John can be there.
Speaking of those... offhanded comments. There were a couple of them I wanted to bring up here real fast. One was the one that Baelish said to Sansa on the way out, half brother, when
your brother's
to Jon.
Half
and
brother.
Then also Sansa says, Jon is as much Ned Stark's son as Ramsay is Roose Bolton's. Thoughts?
She couldn't possibly know anything more than we do about true parentage of Roose and Ramsay.
She may not, but the writers do.
Yeah.
What are you thinking, Micah?
I don't know what to think, to be honest with you.
Secret Targaryen.
I think it's oh my God.
The only way to go.
So they did wake a stone dragon. It was dead Jon Snow, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's clear at this point that Jon is not Ned Stark's son, but does that mean that Ramsay is not Roose Bolton's?
Interesting. Whoa.
Hmm.
You don't think that...
Does it matter if he's going to be dead anyway?
Right?
Yeah, right?
Ghost kills Ramsay, 2K16.
Right.
But they're both bastards of the North.
They are both bastards of the North. You know, it's a real shame John didn't take up Stannis' offer to legitimize him right before that all went down. But, you know, Snow, Stark, none of the brothers have any problem with him. I mean, at least they're not going to go up against him leaving the wall. I think he's fulfilled his duty, and I don't think anybody's really questioning it. At least John has that going for him, because essentially, as soon as you leave the wall... anyone is justified in killing you. You're a brother of the Night's Watch, you're a deserter, and anyone can kill you. I wonder how they'll sort of continue to skirt that, seeing as how Stannis is dead. He's not the king, the one true king, and frankly, anyone who hears that Jon Snow is still alive and left the wall would also say, hey, you gotta kill this guy. He's a deserter.
Can you imagine if that was Jon's fate?
Just to be,
he just gets killed,
so
killed by an enthusiast of the code of the Night's Watch.
Tommen's just like
the current Lord Commander, you know, wished him well, and he did die. I think his situation's a bit unique, but I mean, those are the rules. Is.
But then you get Dolorous saying, "Oh, I'm not the Lord Commander." You know, like he hasn't quite taken up his.
That was cool.
He hasn't quite taken up the mantle 100%.
How awesome was that moment? He's like, "I'm not the Lord Commander."
Look around.
Yes, I am.
Exactly. He's really come up in the world.
And Eric, success there's also story. The fact that by the end of the story, I don't think there's going to be a need for the Night's Watch anymore.
That's a good point.
That's cool. Also, can we talk about the Night's King's ice abilities? When he just shot a tremor through the ground. The Force is strong with this one.
And then he walked through fire.
Yeah. They walked through fire. They're badass.
The children have created a monster.
Yeah.
You know what they say? One way or another, a face will be added to the wall.
You think his face is on the wall somewhere?
The Night's King?
Yeah.
Not yet.
That would be
but
cool.
The Three-Eyed Raven, maybe.
Like I said earlier, I mean, the fact that we had Jaqen and Arya in the House of Black and White discussing how the Faceless Men founded Braavos, basically as they were fleeing persecution, sounded very much like how the Children of the Forest created the White Walkers in order to defend themselves against the First Men. And each of these points were so influential in terms of how these cities have developed and these groups of people have developed over time. And Arya is basically told in this episode that you have one more chance. You can choose to either fulfill what I'm asking you, but it's interesting to me how challenging the situation is that's being put in front of her, because clearly Jaqen is not just sending her to kill somebody who she could, without any thought or regret, just kill. There's these little, I don't want to call them side challenges because I don't think this is a video game necessarily, you know. You know what I mean? But it's like watching that play unfold was conjuring up emotion in her, bringing Arya back to the surface, right? She's been training so long to be no one, but yet Jaqen puts her in this situation where she's watching what happened all the way back in season one to her father. And I can't help but wonder if Arya is not going to be able to fulfill her task here, and she's going to end up killing somebody else who says the wrong thing at the wrong time. Maybe she does kill this lady, but there's somebody else that she offs as well, or multiple people. I don't know, but it just, to me, it's not looking good so far.
Well, this is a true test for her. And she said over and over again that she is no one and that she's ready and that she's training, but to her, the look on her face as she's watching the audience, watching this story that she's so familiar with play out in front of her, it's just a huge, like you were saying, reminder of who she is and where she came from. And especially when Sansa comes, I felt like when Sansa's on the stage, I thought I could just see it in Arya's face. Like, she remembers who she is. And is she going to be able to actually be no one after coming this far along in her training and to still be triggered by familiar things? She's not going to be able to stay away from Westeros forever.
What a trip. How cruel and how strong of a test is that? For the love of God, she was there when some of that stuff happened. That's in the play that she's watching. It's about two of her own family members. She was in the crowd when her father got beheaded.
It's the perfect setup.
She was there for the actual scene of that scene.
I know. How messed up is that? That this is a bastardization. She watched it. Scene. Yeah. So messed up.
How cool, though. That's in the story. That's interesting. Wow.
There's also a line when King Robert is murdered by the boar, and somebody, I can't remember who, says, "I feel the winds of winter as they look across the land." And I was like, "Winds of winter."
Mm-hmm. My first note is, "I love this play." It was so fun, right?
All the farting.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a kind of a poorly done production, but good for those people.
A little bit more rhymey, you know. I really like the world typically is.
That was well done. It was really welcome. It just felt good, like well captured in the show. It was really fun to watch.
And it's a reminder of how far we've come.
Yeah. God, you remember when Robert Baratheon was a thing? You know, still was a dude hanging around. You had scenes with him
then,
right? So long ago. And this is, as it was said, that this is the perfect test for Arya, and this will determine if she will truly cast away her identity and become no one, or whether she'll embrace it. I think it was the girl who said, "I have this quote in my notes: you should go home before it's too late." I kind of agree with her. I think that, you know, that she asks all the right questions of Jaqen. Jaqen says, "A servant does not ask questions," but, you know, he says, does death only visit the wicked? Does, you know, was this woman a bad woman? Did she do something bad? These are all good questions, but they're not questions that are asked by someone who has no problem killing people. And I think that Arya is ultimately going to succeed, which they will see as failing, and she will not be able to become a faceless assassin.
It was good that they gave the history of their order, though. And I wasn't sure that they were going to do that in the TV show, but like you were saying, Micah, it really helps to build out where we are. And sort of harkening back to what I was saying earlier in the podcast when my feelings were a little bit more feely, the whole world has kind of just opened up more. And if the casual viewer connects that slaves in the mines of Valyria, making a decision to become no one, became the people that eventually founded one of the current great free cities in the whole world. That's cool. They're going to feel that. They're going to feel that there. And that magic that they were so close to, I mean, what do you think that they were mining in Valyria? What were those people up to in Valyria? Are definitely rooted in a lot of the mysticism surrounding who they are and what they do in the current time in the city that they founded thousands of years ago. So it's just, it's cool. It's bringing in passively some of the cool parts about reading a fantasy epic, but into a TV show and in a way that I don't think is turning anyone off. And that is very exciting for me as someone who's very into and passionate and nerdy about stuff like that. I like that it's in a TV show and it's cool.
That's a really good point, actually.
Mm-hmm. Real magic and real fantasy.
Yeah, it's like we get it all.
Mm-hmm.
That's why everyone likes the show so much.
Yeah, you get lines by the Red Priestess like, everyone is what they are and where they are for a reason. You're like, damn, so true, isn't it? You just hope for it. You want to believe.
When I was watching and I saw all the children, I was like, yes, okay, what we talked about last week, we're going back then. We're going that far back then. And then I saw their spiral imagery that we saw at the beginning of the series. And I was like, I don't get this because, okay, this doesn't make me feel comfortable. And then just out of nowhere, we saw the origin story of the White Walkers. I was just like, this episode, yes. I bet my grandma loves this.
You gotta check for those text messages.
I know, you want to know what your grandma has to say.
My mom texted me a bunch of question marks and then the word Hodor. And I don't know if she can only say Hodor now after seeing that episode. I'll have to check.
Like, you should try and correct like spell check to be like asterisk hold the door. Correct that.
Man, that's gonna hurt for a long time.
Yeah. How did I cry? How did we cry? How did I? People cried. Real cry.
Danny cried.
Oh gosh, that was a misty scene.
That was. I never expected to be so emotional about a scene between Danny and Jorah at this point. Maybe I just my not enthusiasm, but just this whole storyline so far hasn't been my favorite, I guess you could say, in this series. And then to be hit punched in the gut with this scene between
that moved you.
Yes, I wasn't expected to feel that way when Jorah's trying to leave and she's like, don't walk away from your queen, and she just has that single tear in her eye. I mean, that killed me.
Yeah,
when I take back the Seven Kingdoms, I need you by my side.
I need you by my seat. Flat out says I love you, and moments later she says I need you by my side. I command you to find a cure. What she didn't say is or die trying, but she doesn't need to say it. He knows
what a character he is. Just back to roaming alone. The Andal.
His true destiny.
Jorah, the castaway Mormont, just, he's cool. He's going to have a role, right? Apart from what he's done with Daenerys. Maybe he won't, but like I said,
I think so.
I think all these people coming together, Sam and Old Town, you know, this is all one big recipe. All of it, all these characters, like, this is it's going to take a recipe this abstract to defeat them.
Yeah, I think that's true.
It has to.
And it's all coming together. It's the world is getting smaller, and they absolutely need to be united before they can have any chance against what's coming next.
You know, I was talking earlier about how the children of the forest could be all wiped out, and that would suck. But it just occurred to me, I wasn't thinking fourth dimensionally, because if Bran wants to have a conversation with the children of the forest, he can actually just go back in time to when they were alive, go back in time to when they were making the White Walker and ask all the questions he wants of them then. Maybe that'll be a source of answers for him.
Whoa.
To converse with them in the past. If they are in fact all gone, I just got hope back. I'm pretty happy.
At the very least, we need a portrait of like the three-eyed raven to talk to after all is said and done.
I hope so. I mean, what does it mean you're going to become the new me? I don't know, man.
I don't think Bran knows either.
Well, we have a few days to process this with all of you. Micah didn't even retweet Owens tonight. This was just This is all
not yet.
This is all real.
The tears flooded his smartphone screen.
Zach, maybe I can go back in time and.
You're the worst.
It's already been done.
Okay, so this is cool. This is a lot of fun. This is a lot of fun.
Ugh.
We're gonna do owns. I think we have a few days to process this with all of you, and talk about it on another episode this week.
But you know, I thought about this, and I was gonna give the own to Robert's farting during the play, but.
Not in this episode.
It was one of the more humorous moments of an otherwise very somber episode. So I'm actually going to give it to Sansa. And she had a number of great lines, but this one I really liked when she said to Baelish, "You freed me from monsters who murdered my family and gave me to monsters who murdered my family."
Damn.
Yeah. The look on her face too. Man. Yeah.
I'm so glad, Micah, that you gave the own to her, because I was going to give the own to her. Seriously, I truly was, for what took place in that scene. But now I'm free to give my own to Theon Greyjoy, who is, you know, it's been a while since we could do this, but he really went and did what he said he was going to do and supported his sister, which had to be a tough moment for him. But he did it. He did it well. And if it weren't for that charismatic uncle, I'd say Yara would have had herself a pretty crown, a salty crown. So own to Theon and that hopefully the sibling relationship which is repaired and budding again, starting anew.
You guys both stole my own.
Next time, go first, Hannah.
It's obvious for me. I just want to give it to Hodor, young and old. I want to say, all right, I need to stop lying to myself. It was a lot to process, you know? We love Hodor, and what he did was beautiful. But for me, I think a lot of the emotion came from everything in this episode that moved us into a new understanding of this story. And I think that it's sort of like, I don't want to say a part of me, but a part of something that I really care about sort of died tonight in this episode, along with Hodor. A lot of the stuff that happens just kind of represented A Song of Ice and Fire before I learned these things, and now it's never going to be the same. And that's cool. It was really cool. So I give my own to that, whatever that is. Whatever tears meant. Whatever was being mourned, Hodor, Westeros.
Innocence. The idea that any of us have a choice.
Own to those feelings.
That was great. Hannah, follow that.
Yeah, I just like am getting screwed in the owns tonight. I'm trying really hard not to give my own to Sansa because I feel like I do that all the time. But whatever, I'm just going to do it anyway. I'm going to give my own to Sansa for the first half of the scene that Micah talked about, when she says to Littlefinger about her being with Ramsay, "If you didn't know, you're an idiot. If you did know, you're my enemy." Which I thought was a really powerful line. And then I also loved when she was making him tell her what he thought Ramsay did to her. And she's like, "What do you think he did to me?" He's like, "I don't know." He doesn't want to answer. He says, "Beat you, I guess." And she says, "What else?" And she just is so intense in that scene. And I loved it. So that's my own to Sansa for owning Littlefinger.
There we go. Audible breathing.
What a good episode.
We got a lot of fun stuff to do this week. I mean, there's a lot of fun questions to think about and to talk about. And I'm really, really excited for us to continue to have this conversation this week.
Me too. And I'm excited that we get to involve all of you listening. So please continue to send your owns. Speak to one another. Send Christian and Sam your thoughts. And just thanks, you know, just thank them for donating a part of their life to help bring these characters in this story, you know, to the screen for all of us to enjoy, because it was really cool. And we got to feel those feelings based off someone else's work, and that's pretty awesome.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And if there are specific things that you would like us to speak to Christian about this week, feel free to say that to us. We don't generally interview guests on our show, strictly speaking, as an interview. We just kind of have a conversation and hang out and press the record button. But if something that is non-spoilery is, you know, rattling around your brain, just tell us.
One of those ways is on Twitter. We are on Twitter, twitter.com/GameOfOwns. If you're not following us on Twitter by now, you are missing so much. Pretty much the whole game, as a matter of fact. Mike is live tweeting. We're retweeting Owns. Everything is happening over there. Once again, twitter.com/GameOfOwns. And what's not happening there might be happening on our wall, on our Facebook wall, facebook.com/GameOfOwns. You can scroll upon our wall with your Owns. We tend to call for Owns there. We ask questions. It's a conversation. It's lovely. While you're on Facebook, you might want to check out Kyburn's Candy Corner. Okay, next. And email. You can email us your Owns long form, longer than 140 characters, unrestrained, unrestricted, unbound, unbent, unbroken, contact@GameOfOwns.com. Send us your emails. I think we'll probably make some time to read some of your emails this week. Just as a reminder, this episode was sponsored by Total War Warhammer, which is available today via the Steam Marketplace. Check it out. Epic fantasy, 20,000 roaring orcs.
What more could you ask for?
We tried to record a new Squad of Ice and Fire before this episode. It didn't go over very well because we didn't do a lot of talking. It was just kind of like
heavy breathing.
We're just like numb.
Crying and Micah making really tasteless jokes about stuff that happened. A lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. So if you're interested, though, in checking out the Squads of Ice and Fire we have made that have a little bit more upbeat nature to them, you can do so at patreon.com/goo.
That's how you support the podcast. If you like the podcast, there's another podcast and other things there. And we'll still release this Squad of Ice Fire episode. It's going to be kind of strange, but it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll put some like happy music in it to counteract a little bit.
Maybe.
And,
it's pretty depressing.
It's crazy to think that we are halfway through the season now, episode 5 in the books, but we are still welcoming your rating and reviews of the show over on iTunes. It is the month of May, so nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable when you rate and review the show. We do appreciate you giving us your feedback through iTunes, as it is the place where most people download and listen to the show, and also can find out, if they haven't listened to us before, that we do exist. So thank you in advance for giving us your review.
Well, we did it.
we did it. The first that we held the door. We'll hold the door open for further conversation that will definitely be taking place this week.
Those jokes are too soon still.
Oh, come on. Christian's going to be on the show next, and we'll have a great conversation.
We'll ask him how heavy the door was. Was it easy to hold?
Thank you guys for sharing this with us. This is a really special night. Thank you.